This is VOCM News Talk. Call 709-273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. The views and opinions of this program are not necessarily those of this station. Here's VOCM News Talk host Linda Swain.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and what a difference a day makes.
Oh,
or even a few hours.
I know. The sun came out, Linda.
I saw shadows today. As a matter of fact, I was working by the big windows we have in the front of the building, and I was actually, like, squinting. I was like, ah, my eyes hurt. What's going on? What is that?
Nice complaint.
It is, for a change, for certain. And, yeah, we saw an awful lot of that snow get cut back a bit.
Yes, I'm just hoping it's going to stay that way for a while.
Fingers crossed. We do live in hope. Of course, we are in the middle of March yet. So.
And Sheila's brush.
And Sheila's brush is yet to bestow her bounty on us. How do you like that? Feeling poetic today.
Oh, I love it.
They had warned of some flooding, and some flooding has indeed occurred. In fact, a property owner on Duffett's Road, just off Trans-Canada Highway here, just outside St. John's. It's actually in St. John's, but it, you know what I'm saying, is just outside the main area. They're facing a very serious situation due to flooding and runoff from rain and snowmelt. Chris McDonald's family has a hobby farm and a very sick horse. And when I spoke to him this morning, they were waiting on a vet. But he's concerned that help isn't coming because of the amount of snow, flooding that they've encountered. I spoke with McDonald earlier today as I said, he was awaiting the arrival of that vet. Well, Chris McDonald, you have quite the situation before you. What's happening?
Right now, at the moment, I'm stood up on 55 Duffett's Road. Watching basically a mini river flood our property and a 300-foot barn. And at the moment, I got a sick horse that the veterinarian's on the way. And the road is that bad. I'm worried that the vet's not going to be able to get in here. I'm hoping she is. If not, I'm going to get her with my truck. The city has been well aware of the ongoing water issues that we've been having. We've been working together trying to resolve this, but I'm very disappointed today in the city and Mr. Breen, especially Mr. Breen, because he personally took this upon himself. Basically, you know, we're over here, we're flooded out, we got a sick horse, we're after calling 311, we're after calling our counselor, we're after reaching out for Mr. Breen, no one still showed up. I'm still here looking at a river. No one's coming to help. And this is not something that was not discussed, because we are in the process of trying to work with the city on this, which, to my eyes, I don't understand why you wouldn't send somebody out when it's at the worst conditions, so then you can get better readings, better levels. You know what I mean?
So tell us, for the benefit of our listeners, paint a picture of where this is and what kind of a operation you have there. It sounds like you might have a farm. Is that correct?
It's just a hobby farm is what we have. We have three horses and a little pony. They've been with us for 20-odd years. We're over located off Trans-Canada Highway. Where Frontline Paintball is located, basically. And, what's basically going on is that there's been a lot of development going on surrounding our property. I'm into the excavation game myself, so I know a little bit about it. There's been a lot of ground cleared, so, you know, that water has to go somewhere. Usually the trees, the grass, you know, the grubs, you know, everything would, you know, kind of soak all of that up. As we're now, you know, there's nothing there to soak it up, because now we have paved roads, parking lots, you know, such things like that. So, you know, we're getting a lot of water here. So just so the listeners could kind of, I guess, get an idea, I'm stood here now, and Duffett's Road is basically a river. Like, it's a foot of water. It's literally a foot and a half in places, just gushing water. It's washing the road out, and it's washing our driveway out and washing our barn out.
So has this been a problem for long or since the development?
Since the development started, it picked up then. Before then, we never, ever had an issue. Like I said, the city has been well aware of all of this. This has been an ongoing thing for the last 3 years. We've been trying to rectify it. And today, you know, there's nobody showing up, which I just don't understand. I just don't understand.
Are there any other residents around you?
Yeah, there's another resident here. There's a business across the way, and there's another resident up top of the road. So basically, there's actually two companies, I think, if you want to think about it. You have Frontline Paintball operating out of here where the road just washed out. And up top of the road, I think the man has a crane company of some sort.
And so you're all affected by this washout. What has the response been to your calls to the city?
There hasn't been much of a response, and that's, you know, we've been talking to Danny Breen about this, you know, and him and his staff continuously say that, you know, that there's zero groundwater, but, well, I'm still here in a foot and a half of water, so I think I could tell different. We own 100 acres of property, and it's flooding out.
And you have a sister there who's pregnant as well?
Yep, I have a sister who's pregnant, who's trapped in the house right now. She's in there worried to death, and I'm not joking with you. I'm literally here with a sick horse. I'm not making it up. You're more than welcome to come up here. I'm literally waiting for the vet.
And, of course, that conversation got cut off abruptly because he encountered a problem with the horse at that very moment. So my understanding is that the vet did eventually arrive, but he sent some pictures, and they should be up on VOCM.com. If they aren't already, they will be soon, of just what that family is facing due to the flooding in that area.
I can't imagine. I'm noticing other people now on social media posting what their, you know, their roads are, even this hour now, that it's still kind of just getting deteriorating. Also just got a call as well, Linda, from somebody traveling on the CBS bypass. They said east of the Clover that the water is so bad that cars are hydroplaning, and people are driving way too fast for the conditions, and that the water is going up over their windshield.
Oh my. Yeah.
And that they've had a number of accidents there last night, so they're really surprised that people are driving that fast in that area.
Well, yeah, and that's something to keep in mind, because especially when you see water on the road, especially now with all the snow melt and all the rain, you will expect that it's not just going to be a little skim of water either. And you can hydroplane, by the way, on a skim of water. It just, mm-hmm. It's whatever releases that contact of your tire on the road. And, of course, the contact point of your tires is just, what, an inch or so?
Mm-hmm.
That's all. That's all it's keeping you on.
That's quite scary. Thank you,
on
Linda.
The pavement. You're most welcome. you know, basically, that's the concept. So anything that gets between that contact and with the pavement will cause that car to just...
Yeah, and it's easy to kind of forget because where it is such a nice day, but we still have that water runoff.
Yeah, and you're going to continue to see that water runoff for a while because, you know, as the banks continue to deteriorate
melt.
And stuff
mm-hmm.
and the water comes out of them, we're going to still see a lot of water out there. Thank you for that, Claudette. Well, at the height of last night's rain and wind, there was a fire up in Donovan's Industrial Park. Caused extensive damage to a storage shed at Central Dairies on Bruce Street in Mount Pearl. Platoon Chief with the St. John's Regional Fire Department, Ed Sears, spoke with me earlier this morning. Tell us what happened last night.
Okay, so the St. John's Regional Fire Department received a call at approximately 11:23 p.m. for a commercial structure fire on Bruce Street at the Central Dairies location. Upon arrival, the crew were met with some heavy fire on the exterior of the building, which once they got their operations started, they realized that it was actually in a storage area outside of the main building that they use for housing and storing some of their equipment. Right now, from what we know, we were on scene for approximately 5 hours. There's no fire damage that has spread to the main structure. However, there could be a possibility of some smoke inside. We're not sure to what extent, but it was contained to that storage facility on the outside of the building.
And what kind of damage has been done there?
That part from the amount of fire that was there when he hauled up, I think whatever was inside that storage unit, whatever the case may be, is probably destroyed. Again, it's not something that we, you know, we got into. That's left for the owners of the building to determine once everything is passed over to them from the RNC after the investigation is done. But right now, what we do know that it was contained to that area and that area only.
Any special considerations in this particular fire? Was there anything of particular concern, explosives, for instance, anything like that?
No, not that I'm aware of, and not that we were told. It was just normal, I guess, equipment and whatever else they may use for their daily operations that was inside. So outside of that, I think, you know, it was just a standard facility that they use just for putting, you know, additional material and equipment that they are probably not using at the time, whatever the case may be.
Did the weather hinder or help you?
The weather did hinder. I mean, anytime you get a structure fire with any kinds of winds, up to 100 km an hour winds, and, you know, the rain, it makes everything more challenging with ice and that around. And, of course, the recent snowfall, there's been some large snow banks in there, and we had to avail of some equipment from the city of Mount Pearl to help move a bit of snow so we can get in and conduct our operations.
And the building's a loss?
I wasn't there for the, I think the building, the contents is definitely lost, and it was coming through the roof of the building. So I would not say for sure at this time, but there is a fair amount of damage.
Platoon Chief Ed Sears, really appreciate your time. Thank you.
No problem. Have a good day. Thank you.
And that was the latest as of this morning on that fire in Mount Pearl at the Central Dairies building there on Bruce Street. Well, when we come back, you heard in VOCM News by now the kickoff in the House of Assembly, yet another major disruption, especially from the public gallery. And the gallery was actually cleared today. We'll take you back to the House of Assembly to hear how that went down when we come back right after this. This is News Talk on VOCM.
Stay informed and have your say on the news of the day with your VOCM. Join Linda Swain weekday afternoons from 4 to 5 p.m. for an hour of talk and discussion with decision makers and listeners like you. News Talk on your VOCM.
And we are back. Well, the public gallery was cleared and question period recessed for a period of time due to an ongoing disruption in the House of Assembly. Fish harvesters have been attending question period for days, hoping to put pressure on government for changes to the fishery that will allow them to sell to foreign buyers. The situation boiled over in the House again today amid questions from opposition leader Tony Wakeham. Here's how some of that went.
Speaker, when the Fish Processing Board recommends granting a processing license, why does it sit on the Minister's desk?
The Honourable the Minister of Fisheries, Forestry and Agriculture.
Well, that was one of the things that was discussed in that meeting this morning, and that's around capacity. And as I said, and that is a structural issue in the industry, no doubt. And I've said I'm going to take a serious look at it, and there will be change. But I told in the room today, the measure of the change, I don't have an answer for that right now because I want to do it, do diligence to it, and be responsible in my decision making. Instead of like the member for Fairland who would make any decision, doesn't matter what repercussions is.
The Honourable Leader of Official Opposition.
Speaker, the Premier and the Minister of Fisheries told the House of Assembly earlier that they had gone around the province meeting with harvesters and talking about their issues. And we're back in the House of Assembly today, so I simply ask, what action are you going to take to address those issues?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, and one of the things we heard, as I said yesterday, I believe, Mr. Speaker, loud and clear, was the old panel did not work, Mr. Speaker. The forced choice of extreme prices did not lead to a timely start of the fishery, Mr. Speaker. As a result, one of the things we heard consistent across the province, Mr. Speaker, was a different process. They wanted a different process to help set the price, Mr. Speaker. As a result, in the fall, we led a committee involved with stakeholders on all sides were involved to come together with a formula, Mr. Speaker, that would share the risk on both the...
Order, please. Member Carolyn, again, you're going to be... This is your last warning. The Honourable the Premier.
Again, developed a formula. Mr. Blackwood developed a formula that would share the risk in the high price environment and limit the risk to the harvesters in the low price environment. That's what's on the table right now. That's what's been passed back and forth. That's what the FFAW needs to come back with as a counter proposal.
The Honourable the Leader of Official Opposition.
Speaker, what people are looking for is action. Action. They want to have action. Is the Premier confident that every single issue that he heard in his travels with his minister this past summer are being addressed at this meeting with the FFAW and the ASP? Because that's not what we're hearing on this side. So I ask the Premier, will you get directly involved in making sure that our fishery starts on time?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's 500 years of issues that have existed in the fishery, Mr. Speaker. We heard many of them, many structural, and you've heard the Minister and I commit to doing a fulsome evaluation of that to ensure that we protect the industry within the province. The last thing we want to see is everything moving out of the province, Mr. Speaker. I'm happy to continue if they'll listen. On the top of that, Mr. Speaker, as I said, we have been involved, Mr. Speaker. I called both sides into my office last week, Mr. Speaker, to make sure they were back at the table to try to get an orderly, timely start to this season, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable the Leader of the Official Opposition.
Speaker, words, words, words. That's what we're hearing. Words, words, words. When? 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 Tell that to the people of rural Newfoundland and Labrador who are concerned about their jobs. Tell that to the fish plant workers. Tell that to the people in the gallery. Tell that to the people on the steps of the Federation building. That's what people in this province want.
In the gallery, you're not permitted to participate in debate in favor or against. If it continues, we will clear the galleries. The Honourable Leader of Official Opposition.
Thank you, Speaker. I simply ask on behalf of everyone here, on behalf of people in rural Newfoundland and Labrador and their communities, will the Premier get directly involved?
The Honourable the Minister of Fisheries, Forestry and Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the Premier did get directly involved, and he started the process last year, Mr. Speaker. And right now you have two sides that's at the table. Whether you agree with it or not, the reality is there are two sides at the table. They need to get a deal done, a resolve done, not necessarily a formula. And I heard that in the meeting today. There are structural issues, and I promise to take a look at those structural issues. I identify that, I realize that, and on this side, we're taking it serious. But ultimate right now is to get a deal done so boats can get back on the water and fish plant workers can be working in the fish plants, and so we can have a good season this year. The other issues will be taken a look at, no doubt about it, but you can't fix that overnight.
So as you heard, that the things boiled over, but it didn't end there. The disruptions continued and finally forced Speaker Derek Bennett to clear the gallery and recess question period for a period of time.
Minister, will you take action?
The Honourable the Minister of Children, Seniors and Social Development.
Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. Commissioners, clear the galleries. This house to stand recessed. I ask members to leave the chamber.
So as you can see, the fish harvesters in the gallery not satisfied with some of the responses that they're hearing in the House of Assembly, and they want action taken in regards to, I guess, giving them a greater share and greater competition when it comes to selling their catches. It's a very, very lucrative industry for people involved, and the stakes are very high, and the debt is very high. So and when you have to rely on a business model that relies on so many different elements, including, you know, quotas that are set by a federal government and licenses that are provided by the provincial government and all these various layers.
And the weather.
And the weather and the danger involved and the fact that, you know, storms are stormier and there's all these regulations forcing you to get your gear out of the water at a particular time. And we've seen those types of risks being taken and lives lost as a result. So, you know, there's many, many layers. I know that a lot of people, some people say that, you know, they're tired of hearing about the fishery, but it is such an important part of this province, and so much is at stake. So you can understand when emotions start to get a bit high. In the meantime, the negotiations continue on setting a price for the snow crab fishery for the coming season, which is only weeks away. And we'll keep you up to date on all of that as that progresses. Well, we're up to news time now with Sarah Strickland. This is VOCM News Talk. And when we come back, a permanent tribute to six-time Briar winners Team Guju is in the works for Galway. We'll speak with Danny Williams when we come back right after this.
Saturday morning, join us for the Irish Newfoundland Show. Send your request to IrishNL at VOCM.com or submit them online at VOCM.com.
And we are back. Well, a permanent tribute to six-time Briar winners Team Guju is in the works in the Galway development in the capital city's West End. Former Premier and owner of Ducor, Danny Williams, joins me now. Well, Danny Williams, it's hard to imagine now. 2006, we all remember Torino. And was it a provincial holiday you declared at the time?
Yeah, I think what we did, actually, Linda, if my memory serves me correct, is we gave the school kids an afternoon off. I think that was all we could do because of the timing of it. We could only get a half day in. But yes, it was a holiday, and it was something I think that's etched in our brains for a long, long time. It was a great moment in sport.
So here we are 18 years later, six Briars under Brad Guju's belt. Just incredible. What are you planning to do here?
Well, you know, they use the term GOAT now for the greatest of all time for athletes. And there's no question that Brad and Mark and his teams are the GOATs when it comes to curling. And indeed, in sport in the province, I mean, I've followed and loved sport all my life. But his achievements are really second to none. And I just felt about a year ago that, you know, we'd like to do something in Galway in order to commemorate him and Mark and the teams that have really put us on the map. I mean, you know, we're a province of just over 500,000 people, and to win national and international and Olympic gold medals is a feat that nobody would actually believe could happen from such a small populace. So they have. They put us on the map, and we're all very proud of them. And I just really felt it was worth, you know, making a permanent tribute to all the players. And that just doesn't include Brad, of course, and Mark, but, you know, everybody that's played with them and their coaches over the various years. So that's not it's not a cast of thousands, but it's certainly a cast of 100 for sure.
So we already have the Team Guju extension. What have you got in mind?
Well, what we're looking at doing is putting, you know, I guess a monument doesn't seem to be the exact term, but that's, we've retained Morgan McDonald to commission him to come up with, you know, a concept which will have some sculptures, of course, in it. And everybody knows Morgan has done some great work around the city. For example, the rower down by the lake is a perfect example. So it will have some figures in it, but as well, it'll be a very modernistic look to it that will be kind of eye-capturing, to be quite honest with you. And something that when, you know, our local residents go in or people from around the province go in and see it, you know, it'll bring back all the memories, and as well for people from out of province, just to pay tribute to, you know, to these great achievements in sport.
So to do this, no doubt you have to get city approval, but will public funding be put into this? How is that going to work?
No, it's not anticipated that there'll be public funding. You know, certainly my companies are prepared to do a significant contribution. I've also talked to other people who will be potential donors to this. I mean, it will be, you know, quite an undertaking, to be quite honest with you. But no, it's not intended that the city or the city would put any funds into this at this stage.
Have you got a location in mind?
Yeah, no, we're looking at a couple of locations, interestingly enough. You know, one of the roundabouts that's down by Galway Living and in the new area there would be ideal. It's got enough size and capacity to handle an exhibit of this nature and, you know, would eventually be connecting up with Southlands in that area. Of course, and Brad himself lives in Southlands. So that would be one ideal location. But, of course, you know, I'd have to work that through with the city because, obviously, as you're aware and everybody's aware, we've had, you know, difficulty with the city on roundabouts before. And so I want to make sure the ground rules are very clear before we use one of those. But if not, there's other sites that we could use in the area.
And high visibility, I would imagine, is a big priority here.
Well, exactly. You want as many people to see it as possible. And, you know, with the traffic going through, they'll get a chance to get a look at it. And, of course, safety is also first and foremost. You want to make sure that it's not obstructionist at all in any way to to viewscapes. But you know, there are lots of roundabouts, of course, in the St. John's metro area that, you know, do have, you know, are occupied with different things, whether they have to be flowers or trees or whatever they are. So we want to make sure that it's, you know, captivating to the eye, but not unsafe. And in an area where people will, you know, many thousands and hundreds of thousands over the years will get a look at this, because they're truly worthy of this honor. They're an inspiration to all Newfoundlanders of all ages, Newfoundlanders and Labradorians of all ages. So, you know, I think the tribute needs to be done, and I really like to spearhead it.
What else is happening in Galway these days?
Well, you know, we've got a lot of things happening. Actually, you know, there's plans now for some other businesses going into Galway in the retail area. Of course, the Galway Living, the home area, residential is expanding all the time. And out in industrial, the industrial area basically is on fire now. We've got you know, about another 30-odd acres that have been sold in the last 18 months. And plans are now for an extension to Beaumont Hamel Way as well. So, you know, we're progressing. You know, with COVID behind us now, we've got lots of opportunity to bring in, you know, many, of course, retailers from the mainland are now coming back and having a hard look at Galway, of course, because when travel was down and they couldn't visit, you know, that actually had an effect on everybody in the city. But no, things are positive now and optimistic, and I think, you know, they feel that Newfoundland and Labrador is a good place to do business.
What's the latest on that underpass, overpass? I'm never sure how to call it.
Well, it's actually an underpass. That's virtually completed. I think they were basically trying to make a deadline of getting it done before winter set in. But I think we had a bit of a wild November, and it wasn't conducive to, I think, finishing all the pavement. But all the groundwork has basically been done, and now it's just a matter, I think, of putting a top coat on it and firming it up in the spring. So I would think, and I guess you'd have to speak to the contractor directly, but I would think that by midsummer that underpass should be open. And that'll be, of course, you know, a great relief for any traffic that's moving west, or even people who are coming into Galway. You know, even people coming from the east end will likely come down the highway and then come back across the top of the hill where the water tower is, in order to get into Galway. So that'll be a great access and, of course, relief valve for any traffic that's occurring on any of the roundabouts.
Danny Williams, I do appreciate your time, and congratulations, Team Gujú.
Oh, absolutely. Go Gujú.
And that is Danny Williams, former premier and owner of Ducor, about a monument that he has in the works for to celebrate Team Gujú and their six Brier wins, their Olympic gold medal, you name it. They've done it. Anyway, if you have any thoughts on that, you're certainly welcome to give us a call. Well, bureaucratic inefficiency is hampering development in the province, and in particular the capital city region. That's according to Charlie Oliver of MarTech. He'll join me right after the break. This is News Talk on VOCM.
Every Saturday is perfect for a night at the cabin. The Cabin Party with Brian O'Connell. Saturday night starting at 7 p.m. on VOCM.
And we're back. Well, the founder of a local commercial real estate company says bureaucratic inefficiency is hampering development in the province and capital city region. Charlie Oliver of MarTech says developers, owners, and contractors aren't voicing their concerns for fear of reprisal. But after 43 years in commercial real estate development, he felt it was time to speak. He participated in a recent panel discussion at the Business Owners and Managers Association's annual real estate forum, and he joins me now. Well, Charlie Oliver, you pulled no punches at the recent meeting of the Business Owners and Managers Association Real Estate Forum. And one of the issues that you're raising is this whole idea of provincial tenders that are issued and not awarded. What are the issues there?
Okay, and that's one of three issues, by the way, there, Linda. The issues are, and it appears that government is not doing the proper planning, the research, the calculations of what is needed, space planning, et cetera, before they come out with their tenders. And it's not only in one department, it's in several departments. So no finger pointing specifically, just generally. And the practices are a tender comes out and by and large is incomplete. There are many, many missing aspects. There are many, many questions come back from the private sector, which lead to addendums, which at times lead to a changed, I guess, product, changed pricing, and all too often, government cancels the tender, period.
So you're amounting that basically to a fishing expedition. In other words, they don't know the cost. They're putting these tenders out. They find out what the cost, and then they reissue the tender.
Correct. And at times, change the specification. At times, change the timing. So the thing is my concern outside looking in from all these years, so 43 years of being in the world of business, and this process is continuing, and in my opinion, it is exacerbating itself these days as compared to 5 years and 10 years ago. The reality is they need to get a defined set of parameters. They need to get some preliminary cost estimates. They need to get the budgets approved before they go to tender, not wait till a tender comes in and then seek funds. So it needs, to quote Outward Bound, we need, you know, there's an approach to business. Was it prior proper planning prevents poor performance? And the reality is I'm not seeing that off recent.
So what kind of a impact does that have for anybody who doesn't understand the tendering process and the ultimate, I suppose, from a public standpoint, you know, what that means in terms of cost and the like? Because if you have fewer people putting in bids, ostensibly, there's not going to be as much competition.
Correct. And that's one of the negative byproducts of not awarding tenders. So if my company or my clients bid, whether it's an Eastern Health bid or a Public Works bid, they spend money with architects, engineers, they take time with their own staff, they get pricing, and all of the people involved are involved in it. They get paid, the guy bidding does not. So if I put in a bid for my clients or if my clients bid, they could spend, take any amount of money, 10, $20,000, $100,000, $500,000, depending on the size of the bid. So money gets expended, resources used, and then not awarded. So over that happening several times, people will say, well, I'm not going to bid because it will not be awarded. And therefore, you will see bids coming in with low numbers of bidders, which cuts out the competition piece of it.
You raised another issue, that's lease overholding. What exactly is that?
Lease overholding, defined simply, is you have a lease that expires on December 31st of 2022, and you do not renew your lease. You call the landlord and say, we're reviewing this. We're going to renew this. No defined time, no defined terms or conditions. So the landlord, in the market that we've had, says, okay, so the tenant stays overhauling on a month-to-month basis. So it gives government its time to review, analyze their need for space. However, going back to proper planning, we in the private sector would be doing that 6 months minimum ahead of lease expiry. But we've seen in government now there are many, probably 10, 15, 20, I don't know the exact number, of leases in the overholding category. The negative of that, Linda, is that the owner of that building then, one, cannot, you know, go to his bank and say, I have a solid lease here. So depending on financing structure, it could negatively affect that. Two, it creates an imbalance in bidding marketplace because that landlord then cannot bid that space or won't bid that space, awaiting confirmation from government on staying, extending the term, and so on. So the thing is, it has a negative impact overall. When, if you followed normal leasing practices, they would be at a 6 months in advance minimum.
So what are behind these kinds of delays or policies?
That becomes the multi-million dollar question, Linda. From my perspective, I truly do not think that there is significant medium to long-term planning at play inside of our government's plural. So this is not just provincial government, though we're speaking of it now. So they wait for instructions from either a deputy minister or a minister on what the policies will be, when in reality, a lot of these things should be considered, contemplated, and laid out 3, 4, 5 years in advance, where possible, and certainly within a year for most of the things that we talk about on leasing and tendering. So both those can be solved by proper planning, proper future thinking. The other thing, Lynn, let me throw this in there, is that we tend to, and there's the word red tape comes in, but red tape is a one piece of an iceberg inside of government. We tend to use practices, policies, procedures, structures, rules, and regulations that prohibit creativity inside government. As I said at BOMA, this is not about the people in government at all. The people in government, if they were given some freedom, some elasticity in their choice making, would find and create economic systems that work, reduce timelines, streamline, etc. So the term I like, and I'll take credit for this one, is Muskology, from our good friend Elon Musk, and that is to be asking the question all the time, why are we doing this? What's the basis for it? Is it needed? Can I avoid it? Can I add to it? Can I take away from it? And bring it down, like the layers of an onion, to its core and say, okay, this now makes sense, let's proceed. Instead of having rules and regulations adding on top of each other exponentially, and we're seeing this big time with the city of St. John's, but then the feds are quick on the past 2 to 3 to 4 months with other obstacle creating policies from agencies such as CRA, et cetera. So mark me down as highly doubtful on that part of it.
Charlie Oliver, a lot of food for thought. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Linda, always and anytime. It's a great topic to have many, many people exploring.
For sure. Thank you. And as usual, Charlie Oliver, not afraid to speak his mind and to seek out, I suppose, creative solutions to problems. I suppose that what makes him successful over a 43-year business career. Well, a media professor says news that Atlantic Canada's largest newspaper firm is seeking protection from its creditors is another sign the Main Street Media's business model remains in tatters as digital platforms gobble up advertising dollars. Toronto Metropolitan University's April Lindgren says many media companies resumed cutting costs and shutting down operations once pandemic-related government subsidies dried up. Saltwire Network is also facing a legal challenge from the Fiera Private Debt Fund that claims it is owed tens of millions of dollars after several years of mismanagement. And it's a worrying scenario for sure. It can be argued that local news and news as a whole, genuine news, real news, has never been more in jeopardy and is never more needed. And it's a challenging time in all traditional media these days, and we're seeing the fallout of it on an almost continual basis day by day. It's very important, and once it's gone, getting it back is going to be a challenge, and people will, I can guarantee you, miss it if and when it is gone for good. So it's something that I think the general public needs to be really paying very close attention to. The solutions, if they were easy to find, one would think they would have been found by now, and many companies are doing their level best to pivot and change as needs be. But in terms of consumption of news and the type of news that is required in this age, it costs money to do so. It costs money to put those types of programming and initiatives and journalistic practices into play. And it's a very, very troubling time. in the industry. Well, it's sort of an off branch of this, and you know, arguably caused by, you know, this absolute explosion in social media. An Alberta court has awarded Quebec electronic music artist Frederic Durand $1.5 million in damages in a defamation lawsuit tied to social media posts accusing him of being a sexual predator. Durand says a series of Instagram reposts by a California woman accusing him of sexual impropriety derailed his career. The woman has never met Durand, never checked to see what she was reposting was valid, and says she won't pay up since the judgment isn't from a U.S. court. But I expect you're going to see more of those types of challenges as time wears on, especially in terms of, you know, defamation and this kind of thing through social media. And I think people just feel free to say and do and share things that they would never say, do, or share if they felt they had any level of accountability whatsoever. If they were up on a stage, for instance, they wouldn't say and do some of the things they say and do from the comfort of their couch or their computer desk at home or at work. So very interesting. Indeed, and speaks to, as I said, some of these larger issues that are facing society as a result of this absolute revolution that we are living within. It's a whirlwind for sure. Well, that's it for us for today. We'll be back tomorrow. Do join us then. Try to get out and enjoy some of this sunny evening now that the evening hours are lengthening out a little bit. It's nice to see for a change. So bye-bye for now, and take care.